south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Talk about a macho boots on the ground story that just could never happen up in the States. Just the other day, I was having lunch with this 30-something beautiful Latina. And naturally, when you're sitting around with people these days, they get text messages and phone calls all the time. I mean, come on, have you ever been to a lunch or dinner or breakfast anywhere at all and the person next to you hasn't gotten a couple of messages that either annoyed you or completely interrupted the flow of things? Don't you hate that? So I'm having lunch with this beautiful Latina. She's getting her messages, and she did a good job not answering. Just occasionally giving her phone a quick glance when she'd get a message. Not enough to be too irritating. She was trying hard not to multitask, which is a good idea when someone else is buying lunch. And then about halfway into the lunch, she did pick up. She started in with a pretty heated discussion with the guy on the other end. You could tell she was getting pretty aggravated. Her voice was kicking up a few notches with a couple of half swear words thrown in. Hijo de, which is son of a, without the word bitch on it. The full curse is hijo de puta. It seems nice girls, nice Latinas, will not use the whole phrase. They'll just say, hijo de, and skip the puta or bitch part. Kind of like saying Jesus H. Christ instead of, well, you know, the other. I wonder what that H stands for. Anyway, as far as the extremely common Latino curse term, hijo de puta, nice girls will just say, hijo de, and leave off the last word. Whereas sort of rough, crass, or uncultured Latinas will use the whole phrase, hijo de puta. Anyway, as far as the girl on the phone at lunch, I could tell she was having a heated argument. Even after she hung up, she maintained that sort of irritated look on her face, and I said, what's up with that? Is something wrong? Obviously, there was something wrong. She said, oh, that was my brother. We're having a little disagreement about cars and parking places. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, I've been living in the same apartment for about 4 years. I got really cheap rent because I was the first one in, the first tenant. It's a residential building with only 8 apartments and 8 parking places. She said because she was one of the first ones in, she was one of the people that got a parking place in the shade. 4 places in the lot had a roof, 4 places didn't. That means the last 4 people that came in to rent, if they had cars, had an assigned parking place, but they were out in the sun all day long. And the sun, down here in Latin America, eventually destroys cars, upholstery, paint jobs, trim, anything plastic or rubber. And, by the way, has a nasty habit of turning the protective plastic over headlights into an ugly, fuzzy, urine-colored yellow. That's what happens to every car that's left out month after month directly in the sun. Funny thing, too, depending where a car's oriented in a parking lot, the sun will come up and sometimes fade only one headlight, not the other. By the way, for you gringos and expats looking to buy a used car, that's a great tip-off that the car's been weather-beaten by the sun. But not always, and here's why. You'll probably notice when you go to a used car dealer, all the cars are detailed out pretty nicely. Even the engine compartment's steam cleaned. And those plastic dome headlight covers will be nice and crystal clear. So you'll never know if the previous owner left the thing out in the sun all day, which is terrible, or had protective parking with a roof or some kind of shade. That's because the car detailers down here know exactly how to eliminate, that is, polish out sun-bleached headlights. When a car like that comes in, they've got a special way of buffing that color out and making them look nice and transparent again. However, if you're looking to buy a used car from a private party, not a dealer, if they've got a car with those yellowed out headlights, they just sell it that way. They don't do anything about it. They not only don't try to buff it out, it wouldn't even occur to them. By the way, some of the car aftermarket shops and Amazon, of course, sell kits for exactly that purpose, to buff out sun-stained lights. The thing is, when you buy from an individual owner, they almost never take it to a car detailer and have it polished up and cleaned and armor-alled, etc. They don't bother trying to shampoo the upholstery to get out the ketchup, ice cream, or pee or poop stains. Nope. Details, details. Turns out, here in Latin America at least, individual owners who are selling their cars online or in classified ads are sort of clueless as to how to spiff them up, even though just a little attention cosmetically can pay off. Instead, most often private owners sell it like it is, warts and all. Sometimes they'll even put the photos of the car online and it's not even washed. They'll show photos of the trunk and the back seat with all kinds of junk and kid toys in it. I know it's hard to believe. But worse yet, and this'll bother you if you're a picky person, everyone in Latin America lives side by side with horrendous upholstery stains. From car seats to household furniture, from pillows to carpets to bedsheets, upholstery stains are like a plague. But as for really cleaning out a car before you're going to sell it, why most Latinos don't put in the effort? Well, it's that thing about details, details. But in a way, it's a big advantage for the buyer. That'd be you and me, right, if we're looking for a used car? Because if you find a car that's in really good shape inside the interior, engine compartment, and stuff, that means the previous owner was a detail-oriented person who might even have changed the oil once or twice. But back to this business about getting your car detailed. The average person will never do that because it's something like $30 or $40 down here. Now, to get your car simply cleaned, the car wash down here, it could be $2, $3, $4, or $5. By the way, if you go for the $2 car wash from the guy on the street, they'll come by with buckets and stuff. Do have a look at the quality of the water he's got in the bucket first. Most often, it'll look like it came from a dirty river. It's like taking a bath in someone else's bath water. But to get a car fully detailed, like used car dealerships do when they put a car up for sale on the lot, a detailer down here will charge you and me anyway, probably $30 or $40. I know up in the States, depending how rough the car is, it could be 5 times as much. That means they shampoo the upholstery, pressure wash the engine, put some of that Armor All goop on the dashboard. Oh, that stinks, huh? It's one of those unforgettable smells that keeps on stinking, right? Oh, and a detailer will make the sidewalls of your tires sparkle and shine, too. I always wonder, why do they bother with that? It only lasts about a half a day. But it looks nice on the car lot, right? Funny how tires on new cars don't have that look, only used cars on a lot. Anyway, that's why individual car owners here, Latinos, who try to sell their cars, never take them to detailers. It's about the money. Which, I repeat, is good news for gringos and expats, because then you can see exactly how they treated that car, with no window dressing. That means when you're looking for a used car in the classifieds, you'll know exactly what you're getting. Oh, and about that oil change business, Latinos don't like to change the oil. Again, it's about the dough. So if you are looking for a used car, do pull out the dipstick and see if the oil's clear and thus recently changed, or it's murky and black. Not good. Oh, and Latinos will lie about the condition of their cars. Every classified ad, text, or piece of publicity about a used car will be peppered with BS. They'll have descriptive words in Spanish, of course, that translate to things like perfect condition. In Spanish, that's perfecto or nítido. N-I-T-I-D-O, nítido. How is it that every single used car is described as nítido or in perfect condition? How is that possible? Especially when half the cars on the road are scratched and dented pieces of junk. Even so, you'll see used cars being described as being new, even though they're 5 years old and have 70,000 kilometers on them. I always wonder, how is that possible? I'm thinking that's such a blatant lie. What else are they lying about? If a 5-year-old car with 70,000 clicks on it's new, what do you call a 2023 model with 5 clicks on it? Oh, well. You got to remember, though, no one down here in Latin America gets sued for false advertising. That's the part you got to love. It's rare when someone gets sued for anything at all. And when they do, they almost never make it to court. Now, about the upholstery problem here in Latin America. Think about it. This is the land of the hot tropical sun, right? Unless you're living in the Altiplano full-time, you're going to sweat a lot. And what do fabric car seats do? They absorb liquids, right? Like sweat. However, fabric seats don't bake in the sun like vinyl or leather seats. That's why most cars down here have fabric seats. However, fabric seats absorb everything. Ketchup, mustard, sweat, beer, poop. That's why every Uber you take has its own kind of musty fermented odor, like a mini men's locker room. And also why they sell huge numbers of those stinky Christmas tree things that hang from your rear view mirror that add another musty odor to the mix. I'll tell you, Uber drivers and motorcyclists are living proof that most Latin American guys are missing a few IQ points. Over the years, I've taken lots and lots of Ubers, and I've never seen a single one equipped with seat covers. And that would be the most logical step possible, but no one does it. For Ubers, that would be the easiest and cheapest solution to the stink and hygiene problems that all of them, and I mean all of them, are plagued with. Oh, and a bottle of Scope in every Uber would do wonders, too. Then again, the rest of Latin American car owners don't believe in seat covers either. Even though it doesn't take a genius to figure out if you're going to sell a car that's got seat covers, you just strip them off, and all of a sudden, that car's got a huge increase in value and saleability. Come on, if you're looking for a used car and you've got a choice between stained upholstery and perfectly clean upholstery, duh. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Having lunch with a beautiful Latina who just got riled up over a phone call. With her brother, no less. It was something to do with the apartment she had and the parking place she was assigned in the parking lot. She said when she first got there, she was assigned a parking place with a roof on it. So it was always in the shade. But she didn't have a car back then. Not for the first 4 years living there. So, as it turns out, one of the other tenants who came on much later, so he was assigned a parking place directly in the sun. Turns out the tenant became friends with the owner slash landlord. And so that tenant started parking in the young lady's parking place. And she didn't care because she didn't have a car. But back to that phone call, she said, turns out her and her brother, who'd moved in with her a few months earlier, pulled their resources to buy a car. So they bought one, a nice little used 2017 Toyota Corolla. And when they bought it from the dealer, they drove back home, went into the parking lot, parked in the only available space. It was in the sun. So immediately she walked over to the landlord's apartment. She said, I finally got a car after all these years. I'd like to have my shaded parking place back. Can you inform the guy in apartment number 6 and tell him I need my space? He can go back to his own designated space. Now, the landlord, she said, had always been giving her the eye. She said he was the kind of guy that brought different girls up to his apartment all the time. A mujeriego, she said, which means womanizer. She said everyone knew he had a couple of kids with different women, but it was none of her business. He was just the landlord, and not a good one at that. So anyway, as she stood at the landlord's door, he said, sure, you can have your parking place back if you become my girlfriend, meaning as long as we can get it on. She said, no way, not you and me. Our relationship is strictly business. Please tell number 6 to move his car. To which he said, you know what? It's not my problem. So, all pissed off, she walked over to apartment number 6, knocked on the door and said, look, I really need my space back. I have a car. Well, he stood there a second. He had a fairly nice car, an SUV, a Ford Explorer, which from then on would be baking in the sun every day. He paused a while and said, look, I'll give you $20 a month to keep that spot. She said, no, that's my assigned spot. Let's stick to the rules. He said, okay, I'll move it. Well, she said, he didn't move it that day. And the next day, he'd gone out for a while, so she put her car in that spot. Later that day, she looked out the window and the guy had parked in his regular spot, number 6. The next day, she went to work, came back. His car was in her spot again. She knocked on his door again and said, what's with your car in my spot? He said he'd cleared it with the landlord. He said the landlord gave him permission. He said, if you don't believe me, go check with him. It was only later she found out the guy offered the landlord $20 extra a month to use that spot, and he took the deal. Turns out that fight she was having on the phone with her brother was about the fact that she told her brother. The landlord said she could use her parking place again as long as he could sleep with her and be her boyfriend. And of course, being family, she was hoping her brother would have it out with the guy. But he was no help, and she made a sour face and told me her brother is a macho Latino, too. She was disappointed. He didn't even get mad. He said, of course he's going to use that leverage as landlord to try to sleep with you. He's a Latino. What do you expect? She said her brother didn't exactly side with the guy. He was just saying, that's life here in Latin America. Then I said to her, what are you going to do? What's your next step? She said, I'm looking to move out. Then she asked me, does that kind of stuff happen up in the United States, too? I said, probably in Latino communities, but I'd say homegrown Americans won't do it. They know better, at least the ones that have been in the States quite a few generations. Though it probably happens in white trash areas or ghettos in bad sections of town. In the States, there are lots of macho men in the lower rungs of society. Just check out any rap or reggaeton video. But not so much in middle America. I think they'd think twice before they'd pull something like that because there are lots of women support groups, and always a number you can call, to report macho, sexist jerks who are harassing women. In the States, there are consequences. Then I asked her, Has that kind of stuff happened to you before? She rolled her eyes and said, if you look around, you see lots of Latinas wearing sexy clothes. She says, I don't know why they do that, because they're just asking for it. She said, I quit wearing the tight and sexy stuff a long time ago. She says, I have a closet full of loose and comfortable clothes. It cuts down on the howls, the comments, and the whistle. But she said, even fat and ugly girls get comments and catcalls. She said, that's one of the reasons Latinas prefer extranjeros, foreigners. Because the local guys are cerdos, pigs, including our own uncles and brothers. In fact, she said, even when I was a little kid, my father's friend would come over and try to get me to sit on his lap. He was awful grabby and touchy, she said. It first happened, she said, when she was 6 or 7 years old. Right off the bat, she had a bad feeling about it and didn't like that guy at all. After that, she said she'd get out of the house or go out and play when she knew the guy was coming over. In other words, when she knew he'd be around, she made herself scarce. Now, her dad was tough and very protective, and she never told him about it, nor her mother. She said the guy was never intimate with her, but he certainly tried. He was very grabby, she said, and it was certainly heading that way. So finally, when she was around 16 years old, she told her mother about it. All that time, she was still avoiding that guy. He just gave her the creeps. And when she finally told her mother about it, her mother said, don't mention a word of it to your father. I know your father all too well, and he will kill him. I mean, commit murder. Even if it is his best friend, he'll kill him. She said, seriously, if you don't want to see your dad go to prison for the rest of his life, don't say a word. That's why when I hear stories like that, I don't even get surprised anymore. It's a very macho society, and you can't put anything past these guys. But the society's not to the point where abused women have the full backing of the law. They just don't. Because the judges, the cops, the detectives, most of them are serial womanizers too. And you know, some of the stories I hear from these ladies are extreme. It's stuff you can't make up, and if it was in a book or a movie, you'd say, nah, that's too fantastic to be real. Like that all too true story I told many years back now about the young Latina I know who's a doctor now, by the way. I met her when she was around 27, and she had a 13-year-old kid. If you do the numbers, that means she was 14 when she got pregnant. I knew her pretty well, so she told me the whole story. She said her father was a womanizer. Big surprise there, huh? And he didn't want his only daughter to be taken advantage of because he was guilty of doing that to women himself. As a result, he was extra strict. He wouldn't let her out of the house without a chaperone. And one day, the next-door neighbor kid, who was around 20-something years old, saw there was no one home that day, came over, knocked on the door. She let him in because he was the next-door neighbor, and he raped her. She didn't tell her parents because she was too embarrassed, and her dad was a hard ass with a bad temper. A few months later, when she knew she was pregnant, she had to tell him. First thing her dad did is go down to the local police station. He said to the cops, lock me up and don't let me out for a month under any condition. They said, what for? He said, if you don't, I'm going to go over to the house next door and kill the neighbor kid. He said, if you put me in jail, it'll stop a homicide. And they did. They put him in jail for a month. By the way, they forced the next door neighbor kid to marry her, which lasted less than a year. They got divorced. So now she's stuck with a kid that's the product of a rape. And the dad, the rapist, comes over once a week to visit the kid. Isn't that nice? I wonder if the kid knows. Well, he'll find out sooner or later. Though the amazing thing and the happy ending to that story is she became a doctor. You gotta wonder how she toughed it out through medical school with trauma like that in her background. Anyway, like I said, here in Latin America, crazy stories just don't surprise me anymore. Not when there's a macho Latin guy involved. That's why I always caution gringa lady expats looking for a permanent Latin lover. Well, you'll find Latin lovers, all right. They're everywhere. But permanent, man, you got better odds playing the lottery. Worse yet, most of these smooth Latin lovers don't have a pot to pee in, though they certainly can look cool and sharp. Over the years, I've known a few gringa expats who ended up supporting a few of those losers. Hey, you live and learn. Well, you live anyway. All right, now it's time to get down and dirty. How about let's do a deep dive into colonoscopies? That didn't come out right. Not a pleasant subject, but hey, we're all confronted with that human roto-rooter once in a while. And if not, then you're taking a chance. You know, you're supposed to get one of those colonoscopies, I think, once every couple of years once you hit 50. And colon cancer, man, it's gone hyperbolic. Of course, it wouldn't have anything to do with all the pesticides, herbicides, and all the junk food people eat, right? By the way, I bet colon rectal guys are fun at parties. I'm sure it's a showstopper when the question, what do you do for a living, comes around. What a career, huh? That and gynecology. Though you just have to wonder, why would a lady go to a male gynecologist, unless he was gay. What about a guy patient at a female urologist? I don't know. Talk about not wanting to know how the sausage is made. I keep thinking about this pornography crisis among young men and teenagers. You've probably heard the statistics. The average guy, by the time he's hit 30, hasn't had sex in a year due to being overexposed to porn and thus being desensitized. Well, you'd think that same effect would apply to male gynecologists. I don't know. Anyway, being past 50 myself, I decided to go get my first colonoscopy. You can only put it off for so long. So anyway, since I've got Latin American medical insurance, pretty good plan, I visited my local gastroenterologist, a female, by the way, and they did a bunch of tests, checked the heart out and all that, because you do go under. So they have to make sure you can handle it, being knocked out, that is. Of course, it's covered by insurance. And looking at the pre-authorization, it says, total cost without insurance. That's for the anesthesiologist and the workup, the rotor-rooter, etc. Total cost, $180. That's without insurance. My cost, my 20% copayment, about $34. Now, since my insurance, like most Latin American insurance policies, does not have a deductible, I know. Some of you guys got $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, even $10,000 deductibles. Guess what? My policy's got no deductible. Go ahead, you can be jealous. So anyway, just to let you know, I just looked up the average cost in the U.S. for a colonoscopy. And the most current figure as of December 2022 is $3,000. That means if you've got insurance and it's 20% copay, you're paying $600 out of your pocket. But chances are, if you're the average American, you'll probably be paying the whole boat because your yearly deductible is $5,000. I know, it seems ridiculously hard to believe the cost for a colonoscopy here in Latin America is less than 10% of what it would cost you up in the States. Though you've heard me say before, most medical costs are a fifth to a sixth of what you'd pay up in the States. It just so happens in the case of colonoscopies, down here in Latin America, they're beyond cheap. Still priced like they were up in the States back in the 1960s. Of course, even though there's such a great deal, that doesn't mean people are beating the door down to get an appointment. The fact is, my female gastro doctor says most people down here never ever get a colonoscopy unless they've got trouble down there or there's a family member who has trouble. And now the rest of the family members are freaking out and running scared. Enough said about that. All right, let's hit on another topic that seems to be of concern to most gringos and expats. I'm talking about expired food in Latin American grocery stores. I know that most of you who listen to this show, you are label readers and you check those expiration dates, right? You know, down here in Latin America, I'll never forget the first time I went into a Costco or Price Mart in Guatemala. It was the first Central American country to get one. I'd say around the year 2001. By the way, that first one did not make it. You long-term listeners heard me tell the story a couple of times. Costco sent an American team down to put the store together, and after about 6 months, after they trained up all the locals, including local managers, the Americans left. After about a year, the place started looking pretty ragged around the edges. Details, details again, right? They ended up crashing and burning and pulling out. But they did come back into the marketplace about 8 years later with a new plan, and now it's going great guns. There's Costco's or Price Mart's everywhere in Latin America. Anyway, I'll never forget the first time I walked into the place. It's in around 2000, 2001. It was right around Christmas, and they had pallets full of stuff in the center aisles. Just loads of stuff at 50% off. Why? Because the stuff was all out of date, or just about to expire on January 1st. In fact, I remember a gigantic pallet of Kraft Parmesan cheese, you know, that sprinkle stuff. And I think, back then anyway, the reason why a lot of stuff went beyond its expiration date is because Latinos didn't know what to use it for. They weren't familiar with those products. Remember, around the year 2000, that was slightly before the U.S. started bombarding Latin America with U.S. cable programs, the Retardashians, and 100 other brain-numbing reality shows. By the way, here's my take on foods that have expired. Did you know the FDA up in the States forces every food manufacturer and every company that sells food in a grocery store to put an expiration date on it? Almost all within 3 years of hitting the shelf. You know, it shows you what kind of idiots run government programs. When you can buy a glass jar of that 250-million-year-old pink Himalayan salt, I've got some of that stuff, and on the back of the package it's stamped, expiration date, December 2023. Duh. And how about honey? If it's hermetically sealed, it can last thousands of years. They've found 2,500-year-old jars of honey in Egyptian tombs that was still good. But when we buy honey in the grocery stores, like in that jar that looks like a cute little bear, the expiration date's about 6 months from when you bought it. Duh, again. Same thing with coconut oil. If it's hermetically sealed, that'll last a couple hundred years too. But no, the FDA rules say you have to have a stamp on it, so they put it a year out. You know, they should just shit can all those FDA government slugs. A useless bunch of retards, huh? And how about yogurt? That'll keep for months and months after expiration. Hell, it's already sour. I mean, that's what made it yogurt in the first place. Milk gone sour. Triple duh. Oh, and here's the real kicker. Why does water, when you buy it at a grocery store, have an expiration date? Hell, it's been flowing in reservoirs and underground passageways for a billion years. Well, here's a little secret. Did you know the expiration date on water bottles, plastic water bottles, is for the packaging, not the water? The packaging will break down after a time and leach into the product. How many times have you cracked open a brand new plastic bottle of water and said, yuck, this tastes like plastic? Especially if the bottle's been sitting in the cup holder in your car, getting baked in the sun for a couple hours a day. So, bottom line, that's why bottled water has an expiration date. The water is fine. It's the bottle itself that expires. And here's the thing. If the water's been sitting in a plastic bottle too long and it starts tasting too much like plastic, that means the grocery store is going to get lots of returns. People returning the water say it doesn't taste right. However, if you spend a little extra and get water that's in a glass container, or these new Echo paper cartons. Have you seen those? In fact, I'm actually looking at one right now, made here in Latin America out of, guess what? Cane sugar. You know, the fibrous part that's left over after they extract the sugar. The stems, the stalks, the cellulose. Now they've got containers made out of 100% plant material. But still, this billion-year-old water's got an expiration date of February 2025. One thing that's different from up in the States, though. Down here, packages that have an expiration date often don't say the product must be used before this or that date. Instead, it says it's best if you use before so-and-so date, or it's preferable to consume this product before such-and-such a date. In other words, they're not saying shit can it because you might get sick. They're saying, here's a little suggestion. Use this billion-year-old water before next week. Quadruple duh.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.